State Affairs Committee will come to order at about 5 minutes after 8. And today we'll be considering House Bill 14, which is an act designating the Alaska Malamute as its official state dog. We'll also be hearing HB 136, which is an act limiting the release of certain information regarding certain public employees or officials. And but we're going to begin with HB 14. This will be a very interesting bill. But one thing, I hope everybody's read it. It's two lines. So, but those always turn out to be the more difficult bill. The shorter they are, the more difficult they are sometimes, I think. So, would Representative Gardner please come forward? I'm going to ask her to present the bill, and then for the and could you tell us in your presentation what group we're going to be hearing from here?
Yes.
Either here or on telephonically.
Thank you.
And then we'll talk about how we're going to handle that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Berta Gardner. I represent Midtown District 24 in Anchorage, and I'm very happy to be here. This has been a really fun project, and I appreciate the hearing here. House Bill 14, I would never say it's a simple bill. I'd say it's a bill that appears to be about naming the Alaska Malamute our state dog, but in essence, it's about something very different and much more important than that, in my view. Many of us have constituent meetings every year, and last year when Senator Ellis and I held a constituent meeting, we were joined by some representatives of Polaris School, a school in my district. And after the meeting, they asked if we would consider helping them with a project, and they wanted to have the Malamute, the Alaska Malamute, named the state dog. So we went to the school and talked with them about the legislative process and how everything works. Through from conceiving an idea and drafting a bill and amending it and reading it across, assigning to committee, how it can be parallel or one body and then the next body, and how once a bill is read across, it's no longer the property of the sponsor, that it can be amended and things happen. But the first question I asked them was, why should it be the Malamute and not the Husky? Because I think many people think of the Husky when they think about dogs in Alaska. They had done their homework. They had very, very good answers, and they persuaded me, and I agreed to move forward with the bill. So we drafted it last year, went back, met with the kids again, and they wanted to make a change. The original draft named the Malamute. They said it should be the Alaska Malamute. So we changed it and helped. The long and short of it is that every word in the packet is written by the students or at their request.
That's probably why it's so easy to understand.
that could be. And the only role we have had is doing the parts that they couldn't, which is the bill drafting. But they spent the rest of the year writing letters and trying to elicit letters of support and talking about it. They had Malamutes come into the class. They did all kinds of things. So they are prepared for this morning. But regardless of the outcome, my purpose here was to show them representative citizen democracy. And so whatever happens with this bill, I know they know more about the legislative process than I did when I came down here. They know that we really do have a representative democracy. Things don't always happen the way a citizen wants, but they know that they can talk to their representatives. They can lobby for things. They can advocate for things. They can make stuff happen. And they know, most importantly, that a citizen democracy, they can do much more than simply turn in a ballot every year. They get that, and who knows what seeds have been planted in this process, and that, members of the committee, has been my real goal in this whole process. I don't have a great passion for the Malamute or even whether or not we should have a state dog, but I do have a passion about democracy and about people being involved, and it's been just great fun working with these kids who are so enthusiastic and have worked really hard. So there are about, I think, 26 kids online ready to testify. They know that time is important. They're not going to repeat themselves. They have a few things that they want to tell us. They'll be brief and efficient, and I think that in the end, you'll all be persuaded that it's a good choice to have the Malamute be the state dog. Thank you.
And before I make any further comment, I'd like I neglected to recognize the committee on my left as Representative Peterson, Representative Wilson, Representative Johnson, Representative Gatto, Vice Chair Seaton, and Representative Gruenberg will be here shortly. He's testifying on another bill, so he is, in fact, excused.
Mr. Chair, if I might, I'd just like to say that Jamie Rodriguez is the teacher of these. They were second and third grade students initially. Now they're third and fourth grade. And, of course, some of the kids have come into the classes and joined the project partway through, and a few are not involved in it right now. The initial, the child, Paige, whose idea it was originally, is actually not in the classes that are moving forward, but she's still participating. And this afternoon, a few members of the school community are flying down. They had the opportunity to come down, and unfortunately, the timing just didn't work out for them to participate here. But as soon as this hearing's over, they're going to the airport. They'll be in the building this afternoon, so you may see a few of the Polaris kids.
And so these people are going to testify in what grade?
They are third and fourth grade.
Third and fourth grade. And I've taught fourth grade at one time.
Mm-hmm.
They may learn that by the time we get built out of here, they could be college graduates.
Well, they do know that if it doesn't work this year, there's always another chance.
Well, with that, any questions for Representative Gardner before we go to our people who are going to testify? Representative Gardner.
The name of every school seems to have a name for their teams. What's the name of the team for the
I don't know what the school mascot is. I don't believe it's the Malamute, but I'm sure somebody online through the chair can answer that.
Thank you.
It may be if the bill passes. And I may have a couple of an amendment later on, but we'll deal with that when we get there. So with that, I'd like to welcome the people who are going to testify, and you're going to learn some good lessons here today. The system we have of passing laws in this state, any other state, or even in the United States of America, it's not a perfect system, but it's better than anything else in the world, and it does work. And so let me read the bill since it's so short. It is Section 1, be enacted that Alaska Statute 44.09 is amended by adding a new section to read, Section 44.09.140, State Dog. The Alaska Malamute is the official state dog, so we need to know why that might be a good idea. And so, Paige Hill, are you there?
Yes.
Well, good morning, and welcome to the House State Affairs Committee. Would you please give us where you are, and whom you represent, and your testimony?
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good
morning. My name is Paige Hill, and I'm in the second grade at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. When I was in kindergarten, my grandma Shirley came to Alaska to spend Easter with my family. Since I was a kindergartner, she came and spent the day with my class. You see, my grandma Shirley teaches second grade in North Carolina, and she wanted to teach us about things from where she came from. One of the first things she taught us about was her state symbols. We learned that their state dog is a plot hound. That is what made me ask, what's our state dog? Nobody knew for sure what it was. Later we found out we didn't even have a state dog. And this is where it all began. My teacher decided to help us do some investigating. We wanted to figure out how our state could get a state dog. We found out that two other symbols, the Willow Ptarmigan in 1955 and the Fur Spotted Skimmer Dragonfly in 1995. Both came state symbols because of kids working hard just like us. After lots of discussions, we narrowed our choice down to two types of dogs, the Husky and the Alaska Malamute. We finally voted for the Alaska Malamute. One of the reasons we picked the Alaska Malamute is because it's big like Alaska, and because it's a hard-working dog like the people of Alaska. The next school year, our class asked two older classes to join, help us to join and research more about the Alaska Malamute's history. We learned that this great dog has been in Alaska for thousands of years. It's one of the 12 ancient breeds and the only dog native to the United States. The Alaska Malamute is a working dog who works right alongside people all through Alaska's history and helps make Alaska what it is today. We know that once people understand the Alaska Malamute's long and loyal history, they will realize that this is the dog to be our official state dog. Thank you for taking our bill seriously and for helping to have the Alaska Malamute declared the official state dog.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We've heard a lot of testimony in this committee on all kinds of subjects, and I'd like to say your testimony is just excellent, and it compares to other good testimony that we've heard here on other bills. Any questions for Paige? If not, thank you very much, and this is for everybody who's going to testify. I hope you consider getting into student government because you're on the way, and maybe you can be here sometime. But not in my district, please. Clara Bradley, excuse me, Chiara Brady. The chairman can't read too well here.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Chiara Brady. I'm a fourth grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. We know that some people, and possibly some of you listening to us today, feel that the Alaska Husky should be recognized as the official state dog. Some of us felt that way too when we first started our research, but what we found convinced us that the Alaskan Malamute is the right choice for Alaska's official state dog. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Really pretty. Any questions for Ms. Brady? Would I ask the folks down there, somebody, to move the microphone a little further away because it comes across very clearly. We have several committees hearing this. Rhea Stamm. And if I mispronounce any of these names, please let me know. Rhea?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Rhea Stamm. I am a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. The Alaskan Malamute is a fine example of a breed of dog developed for a particular purpose. They helped early Arctic settlers hunt and pull heavy sledges loaded with supplies. They assisted Arctic explorers and were able to work for weeks on end without negative effects of the daily strain. They helped during the gold rush and later before statehood, when Alaska was not as easily traveled as it is today. Throughout history, people needed an animal who could help them, and they got all that and more from the Alaskan Malamute. They also got a dog who was smart and loyal and who worked well with people. Sometimes they even helped raise the kids. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you again for participating. And Kai Roberts?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Kai Roberts. I am a fourth grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. The Alaskan Malamute, as you know, is still around today, and its characteristics have been preserved so that, theoretically, today's Malamutes are able to do the same job as their forefathers. In other words, they continue to be the same amazing dog that they were throughout Alaska's history. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johnson has a question for you.
This is not as much a question as I would... I think these guys are great speakers, and I'm wondering if they are, in fact, reading testimony, if we could have that submitted so that it would appear in the permanent record of the state with their name in the testimony so that we could get that submitted and their written testimony also be submitted so that they can be part of the history of this... document.
Very good. And I would recommend if any of you do have a written testimony, if you would mail it to us and we can get the address to you, because we want this to be part of Alaska's history. And everything we do on this committee, other committees, and on the House floor becomes part of Alaska history, and you can go into the computer and you can see it. Thank you. Vice Chair Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the people testify, I was wondering, I've heard a lot of references to the gold rush and usage of the dog involved in Alaska after the gold rush time and explorers came. Is somebody going to address the usage of the dog and its involvement in Alaska prior to either the Russians or the advent of, America into Americans into Alaska? So more of the interaction of the Malamute with the native culture. And so I didn't want to ask a particular person because they weren't ready.
So either maybe the sponsor or the teacher might answer that question.
Mr. Chair, I know that the students have collected information about the much earlier uses of the dog in this state, and I'm assuming that of the 26 people who want to testify, and each person has unique testimony, I'm sure it will be covered.
Which is very good, because sometimes we get the same, but this is very unique. I did want to ask somebody, and I don't know if Gavel to Gavel is live now or if it's going to be delayed and shown later, but I'm just wondering if the students are able to see the committee in action here on Gavel to Gavel as we're going through the hearing.
The chair, I'm confident that will be arranged for them to see it at some point when it's on Gavel to Gavel.
I just wondered if it's going on now. Says yes. The TV crew over here said yes, it's going out live. So I hope you call your friends, relatives, and parents so they can see and hear your great testimony. Sonny Casey? And first, if I mispronounce the name, please let me know. Sonny Casey? Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
And good morning to you.
I am a second grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. The Alaska Malamute, one of the oldest Arctic sled dogs, was named after the native Inuit tribe called Malamutes, who settled along the shores of Kotzebue Sound in the upper western part of Alaska within the Arctic Circle. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, our next person on my list is Kaylee Schaefer.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Callie Schaefer. I'm a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. The Alaskan Malamutes have been in Alaska for over 5,000 years, and some people claim up to 10,000 to 15,000 years, and even up to 20,000 years, as evidenced by bone and ivory carvings found by archaeologists. They show ancient Malamutes almost identical to today's breed. Recent DNA analysis confirms that the Alaskan Malamute is one of the oldest breeds of dogs. The Alaska Malamute is known to be one of the 12 ancient breeds. Thank you.
Thank you. The chair did not know that. I think a lot of us didn't know that.
That's right.
Thank you very much. Any questions? If not, we'll go to Thomas Turnell, or Turnell? Turnell, I suppose. Are you there, Mr. Turnell?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Thomas Tunnel. I'm a third grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
The Malamute Eskimos originated the breed. The original Malamutes were 120 to 180 pounds. Today's Malamute is smaller, approximately 85 pounds. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir. Any questions? If not, I'd like to hear from Atticus Madland. Atticus,
are you there? Chair, my name is Atticus Madlon. I'm a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. The Alaskan Malamute is the native Alaskan Arctic breed that is close cousins to the Eskimo dogs of Canada, Greenland, and Labrador, cousin to the Samoyed of Russia and the Siberian Husky. Also in this group are dogs from Japan, Norway, Finland, Holland, and many others. The Alaskan Malamute is the only breed of dog out of over 150 breeds recognized by the American Kennel Club that is native to the United States. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And also for the information of the student, we also have Channel 2 here, and I assume at some point they're going to broadcast at least part of this, so you may want to be watch it. It's not a commercial. All television stations are welcome here. Thank you so much. Adeline Wright.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Adeline Wright. I am a second grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. The Alaskan Malamute can stand severe cold weather and they are easy to care for. Low metabolism, so only eat as much as a smaller dog, making them easier to feed and care for. They love people, especially children, and work as partners with their humans. They are often mistaken for huskies. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're a lot larger dog than a husky, typically, are they not? So you get some questions there once in a while. Is it the Alaska Malamute, is that typically a larger dog than the husky? Would one of the testifiers answer that?
For the record, Mr. Chair, yes.
Thank you. Okay. The answer was yes. It is. Who was it? That was a...
Larger dogs.
That was... Was that you, Atticus, or was that Adeline? Who answered?
For the record, Mr. Chair, this is Jamie Rodriguez, the teacher at Polaris, or one of the three teachers at Polaris K-12 school. That was Adeline.
Thank you, Adeline. Okay, Walker Platsik.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Walker Platsik. I'm a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. The Alaska Malamute was never destined to be a racing sled dog. It was a working dog. It was not built for speed. It was built for heavy draft work. It is a heavy-boned dog with powerfully built, strong shoulders. When working, the Malamute shows a steady and tireless gait. It was used for heavy freighting, pulling thousands of pounds of supplies to villages and camps. They were very strong, able to pull very heavy loads, and they were used in hunting seals, were set loose in packs to track polar bears, and to haul heavy sledges, and to pack in supplies. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the gentleman? Thank you so much. Chris Gray, are you there?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Chris Gray, and I'm a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 school, and the Alaskan Malamute ability was so amazing and widely respected. The Eskimos who lived inland traveled to the Kotzebue Sounds to trade furs for dogs and supplies. This is how the Malamute found their way to other regions of Alaska and even to parts of the Yukon and Canada during the Gold Rush. Were the gold diggers and some of the dogs that came with them to the Yukon made the Malamute acquaintance some 100 years ago? Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Senior, do you have a comment on the Gold Rush?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm learning a lot about the history of the dog from ancient times through the Gold Rush, and also it's very informative testimony. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Vice Chair Seaton. Rosemary Flesher? If I leave somebody out, when I get to the end, if I need somebody out, let me know. Rosemary Flesher?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Rosemary Flesher. I'm a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. During our research, we discovered that dog mushing is Alaska's official sport. Of course, the Husky is known to be the best sled dog racer and a very important part of the sport. To the people who feel that the Husky should be our official state dog, we respectfully point out that they already are. Alaskan dog mushing would not be what it is today without the contributions of the Husky. They are dog mushing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? Thank you. Thank you, Rosemary. Caitlin McLennan.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Caitlin J. McLellan. I am a fourth grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. The Alaskan Malamute has a very long history and were a very important part of the earliest cultures of Alaska. By designating the Alaskan Malamute as the official state dog, we are honoring that long history. We are also honoring the first Alaskans who worked in partnership with this amazing dog, and who also deserve to be honored. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You remind me of some of the other legislators we hear during debate on the House floor. Very good. Any questions? Ms. Abigail Seitz?
Good Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Abigail Sykes. I'm a third grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. Malamutes babies at the Inuit children while parents were out on hunts, which is one of the reasons they make very good family pets. They were so gentle that they allowed the human babies to go in and snuggle up with their puppies. The use of the dog was a partnership for survival. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? If not, you folks are giving us good testimony. We don't have that many questions. Is Anus Cochran, are you there?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Ani Anus Cochran.
Good morning.
I'm a fourth grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. In summer, the Malamute people fished and hunted inland. In winter, they hunted hunted sea mammals on the coast. Their dogs, the Malamutes, assisted in hauling their possessions between spots, tracking polar bears and other quarry. Hunting seals, moving meat from the hunt back to their base, and with the hunt itself, as well as lookouts for bears and guarding caribou herds. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? If not, we're going to go to Jasmine Risky.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Jasmine Risky. I'm a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. In the 1700s and 1800s, European explorers to Alaska were impressed with the breed. They were impressed not only by the hardy dog, but also by their owner's obvious attachment to them. Early writings indicate that the dogs kept by the Malamute people were better cared for than the usual for Arctic sled dogs, and this seemingly accounts for the breed's affectionate disposition. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? If not, Kenji Matsuoka.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Kenji Matsuoka. I am a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. Travelogues of the early Russian and English explorers often reported a superior and better-kept type of work dog kept by the Malamute people. They wrote about them being less wild, more friendly and easygoing, and capable of an enormous amount of work, both hunting and hauling. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Anybody? Yeah, Vice Chair Seaton.
Thank you. There's been a couple of references through the testimony about the Malamute people. Is that a term for a certain tribe, or where does that term come from?
Through the chair, Representative Bob Lynn.
Yes.
Representative Seaton. They are now known as the Inuit tribe today.
Thank you very much. That's helpful.
Thank you very much. And I had a committee hearing yesterday, and we couldn't get anybody to remember the terminology going through the chair, so congratulations. We have Clara Veelman.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
My name
is Clara Veelman. I am a fourth grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. Captain Cook came to Alaska in 1776 to find the fabled Northwest Passage, a trading route across the top of North America, from Europe to Asia. His journals and logs showed that he was very impressed by the big, strong, hardworking Alaskan Malamute, who got along and worked so well with humans. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to acknowledge that my friend Representative Grunberg has joined our committee. He was testifying at another hearing. I assume under one of his belts. I hope it went well.
And it did.
Very
Thank
good.
Thank you. We had to kill one of the children, but...
No comment.
Okay. He's joking.
He's joking.
That was a bad taste. No, it went very well. Take one provision out.
All right. That one threw me. Sabrina Urban.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Sabrina Urban. I'm a second grader in Polaris K-12 in Anchorage. By the time of the Gold Rush, Alaska Malamutes was the ability to haul equipment and people were in high demand. They were so highly valued that a prospector would pay $500 for one good dog and $1,500 for one small team. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Appreciate that. And Raleigh Pig?
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
My name is Raleigh Pig. I am a fourth grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. Many dogs were being transported to Alaska during the Gold Rush and used for travel to the farthest reaches of the wilderness in search of fortune. Irish and English setters, Siberian Huskies from Russia, Canadians of every type, the demand for dog outweighed their supply in the northernmost state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, Oceana Gamble Howes.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
My name is Oceana Gamble Howes. I am a third grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. Many people cross their dogs to the Alaskan Malamutes to try and make them bigger and stronger and better suited to the climate. The Alaskan Malamute breed was almost lost during the Gold Rush era, but few dedicated Malamute enthusiasts did their best to save the breed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? If not, we're going to go to Desiree Armstrong.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Desiree Armstrong. I'm a third grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. Long after the Gold Rush, Alaska Malamutes continued to be available freight dogs. They were easy to care for and could pull very heavy loads to areas that were otherwise not accessible. Thank you.
And thank you. And anybody the committee can jump into the question if they'd like. Ryan Terry.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
My name is Ryan Terry. I'm a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. The Alaskan Malamute helped haul the mail and freight supplies in Bush, Alaska. After the Gold Rush, Alaskans, both native and white, continued to make good use of sled dogs for travel, hunting, and trap lines, and most important, for mail delivery. During the frozen months, when ships couldn't reach Alaska's harbors, dog team mail carriers and relays of 300 miles each transported mail over 1,000 miles of Alaska terrain. Alaskan Malamutes played a huge part in this. They were the Mack trucks of their day. Often they were carrying 1,000 pounds of mail at one time, and it is said they would arrive in Nome frisky and ready to run again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we have a question from Representative Wilson
of
Wrangell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ryan, it sounds to me like the Malamute then really wasn't a dog that they used in the races because they weren't very fast, but they were just very strong and could really carry a load. So they were working dogs rather than racing dogs. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to point out for the young Alaskans who are testifying here that we are a very representative body. There are 40 members of the House representing 40 different areas of Alaska. And today at our table, we have Representative Peterson. He's from Anchorage. Reverend Wilson from Wrangell, which is down in the southeast. Reverend Grunberg, in the Mountain View area of Anchorage. On the far right, we have Representative Johnson of Anchorage, Representative Gatto of Palmer, and Representative Seaton of
Homer.
I knew that. And myself, Bob Lynn, from South Anchorage, near the zoo, but not in the zoo. That's here. Okay. Will Robertson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My
Good morning.
Name is William Roberson. I am a fourth grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. By 1908, a new sport also began to take shape. Racing your dog team was soon a big social event. Dog sled races popped up all over the remote communities of Alaska. The Siberian Husky was also first imported in 1908 to get in an effort to get a faster sled dog for racing. People continued to mix their dogs, and this is the time when the concept of Alaska Husky, the beginnings of today's sled dogs, began to emerge. That is why it has so many looks today. As you know, dog mushing starring the Alaska Husky went on to become the official state sport in 1972. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Napa, it's Roberson, right? William Roberson. So I apologize for the mispronunciation. Jory, is it Ist or Ist?
Yes.
Jory, you there?
Chair, for the record, yes.
Yes, okay. Jory, continue, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Joey Ace. I am a fourth grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. During the 1925 Sierra Rum to Nome, about 150 sled dogs relayed diphtheria antitoxin 674 miles by dog sled in a record-breaking 5.5 days, saving the small city of Nome and the surrounding communities from an epidemic. The Alaskan Malamute played a role in this important event, doing their part to carry the badly needed medicine to Nome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? If not, we're going to go to Trent Devereaux.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Trent Devereaux. I'm a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. Malamutes contributed to the polar expeditions of Perry Amundsen and Byrd to the South Pole. Malamutes were employed to pull heavy supply sleds. The successful exploration of this vast continent could not have been accomplished without these dogs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Gwyneth Meek?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Gwyneth Meek. I'm a third grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. The Alaskan Malamute was important to America's efforts during World War II. They pulled sleds in snow-covered areas were not accessible to others. More mechanical means of transportation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next person to testify is Taylor Bagden.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Kiana Taylor Bagden. I'm a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. During World War II, Alaskan Malamutes were also used as pack animals to carry weaponry and ammunition across the frozen ground. They served as search and rescue dogs, and they sniffed for landmines. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Reverend Goddard, did you have a comment or question?
Yeah, I'm going to ask a question. Thank you. It's pretty much addressed to all of the students. It's Polaris K-12, but I think we have not heard from anyone higher than a fifth grader. So
we
have a sixth grader. So is this legislation proposed by the Polaris K-12 school limited to only up to the sixth grade, or are there other students also involved? I guess that would be a question for the last person that spoke.
It'd be Taylor?
Through the chair, Representative
Gatto.
Our whole student body and student government supports us.
Okay, and then I'm going to ask you a second question, if that's all right. Is that all right?
Yes, it's okay. It's all right.
Thank you. I drive by Polaris K-12 occasionally when I'm in Anchorage, and I don't remember seeing on the side of the school the name of the mascot that the school has. And I'm guessing it's not the It's not the Polaris Huskies or the Polaris Malamutes, or is it? I guess that's my question.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, it's the Wolf.
The Wolf. So, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It's real tough to get them to do anything except run from airplanes,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
Maybe this is for Representative Gardner or somebody, but one of the other schools has the Husky as its motto, and I don't remember which school it is, and I don't know if anybody here knows, but there is a school that has in Anchorage that has the Husky as its mascot.
You know Representative Gardner?
I don't know offhand, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Representative Gatto.
Of course, the University of Washington has the Huskies.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto.
Yes.
Huffman has the Husky.
That's Huffman Elementary. This is Grunberg. That's Huffman Elementary School.
Yeah, and yeah. I should know that since that school's in my district.
There you go.
I should know. You know, when you testify on this or any other bill, you always run the risk of somebody asking you questions. And when I present a bill, people ask sometimes they're pretty tough questions, and it always makes us nervous. Representative Gatto?
Thank you. It's Representative Gatto once more, and hopefully the last time. I have one more question on it, and I know there is one school in Alaska that has the Malamutes as their name. And so I'm at the end of all your testimony, I'm going to ask you if anybody knows which school that is. Thank you.
Now, the way we do that in the legislature, somebody asks a question like that, then we send our staff out running to get the answer before the committee hearing is over. Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chair, I see we have in our packet a letter from Central Middle School of Science from the principal, Lisa Zelenkov, and she says that Central Middle School's mascot is the Husky. I was thinking that, but I didn't want to say it for sure.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto.
And Grunberg.
Lathrop High School in Fairbanks. And O'Malley in Anchorage. Has the Malamute for their state symbol.
Good for you.
Their symbol, I mean. Sorry.
Good. Good for you. You get 5 stars for today. You can tell your teacher that.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that your secretary is trying to get the name of the speaker.
And that last, it was Representative Gatto.
No.
No.
Teacher. The teacher.
Who answered the last question? Was that Taylor? Did you answer the last question? Taylor Bagden.
Mr. Chair, for the record, yes.
Thank you. Yeah, see, we have a couple of folks over here who are taking off. Maybe a gavel camera can swing around and show we have people keeping notes of everything we say and do. Why don't you guys wave at gavel to gavel there? It's a big opportunity. Thank you very much, Taylor. Jessica Husa.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Jessica Husa. I am in third grade at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. During World War II, the military tried to make the Alaskan Malamute a guide dog, but they failed the test because they like people too much to attack a person. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? If not, we're going to go to Duncan Wright.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Duncan Wright. I'm in the fifth grade at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. We would like you to consider the following points of grammar. The M in Alaskan Malamute needs to be changed to a capital letter. We believe that the word Malamute in Alaskan Malamute is a proper noun because it names a specific dog, and so it should be capitalized. We learned that historically, the Alaskan Malamute was so respected for its ability to haul loads that people began to use the word Malamute to indicate any freight-pulling dog. This common use makes it a common noun. A common noun is not capitalized because it doesn't name anything specific. For example, the words man, city, and dog are common nouns. The general use of the word Malamute to describe any freight-hauling dog is also a common noun.
A proper noun names a specific noun, so it's capitalized. For example, Mr. Lin is a specific name, Juneau is a specific city, and Alaskan Malamute is a specific dog or breed of dog. We researched the American Kennel Club website and found that they capitalize all dog names. Alaskan Malamute, Afghan Hound, and Siberian Husky are all examples of capitalized names of dog breeds. In House Bill 14, we are talking about a very specific Malamute, namely the Alaskan Malamute, the dog who has been an Alaskan since the beginning, and so we believe that it needs to be capitalized. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And from time to time, there are vacancies in the staff down here in the legislature, and everybody's staff had better do well, because we have a potential staff member down here. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did raise this matter with Ledge Drafting, and they tell us that the way the bill is drafted, with the Alaska capitalized, Malamute not capitalized, is the way it should be done. And by golly, it's hard to, for me to argue with legislative drafting.
Well, as I discussed in my office on another subject, there are drafting manuals that are used. Different newspapers had them, magazines had them. I assume different legislators had them. Different journalistic organizations have drafting manuals. And I guess it's which one you pick. And we may have a vacancy over legislative drafting, too. Youngshu Wong.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
This is Youngshu Wong. I'm a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. I'm going to give you an important argument against using the term sled dog, mutt, or Alaska Husky as our state dog. We've researched state symbols of Alaska and other states, too. All of the symbols we found name something very specific. For example, our state marine mammal is not the whale, it's the bowhead whale. Our state insect is not the dragonfly, it's the four-spotted skimmer dragonfly. It's the same for all the other states, too. All of our state symbols are very specific. The 9 states who have an official state dog name a specific breed. The terms sled dog, mutt, and Alaska Husky are just general names. The Alaskan Malamute, however, is a very specific breed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll have a comment about that in a few minutes. Sam Brown, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Sam.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Samuel Martin Brown. I'm a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage.
Morning.
During our work, we came across some minor opposition. This included an article written by Craig Medrid in the Anchorage Daily News. A person commenting on Dermot Cole's article in the Anchorage Daily News Minor, and a couple of other people we've heard of along the way. We recognize that the Alaskan Malamute has made a great contribution to Alaskans and Alaska, both as a light and both as a work. We recognize that the Alaska Husky has made a great contribution to Alaskans and Alaska, both as a light working dog and a recreational sled dog. However, the Husky does not have the extremely long history of the Alaskan Malamute. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Is it Kaya or Kaya Porter?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Kaya Porter. I'm in fourth grade at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. The history of the Alaskan Husky began with the Gold Rush in the late 19th and the earliest 20th century. The Siberian Husky was imported to Alaska in 1908. In comparison, the Alaska Malamute has been in Alaska for at least 5,000 years. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, we've got three more on my list here. Owen McGee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Owen McGee. I am a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. Our official state sport is dog mushing. The Alaska Husky, bred for and known to all as a racing dog, is already been recognized by the adoption of dog mushing as the official Alaska state sport. Without the Husky, there would be no dog mushing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? We go to Maeve Riley.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Maeve Wiley. I am a third grader at Polaris K-12 School in Anchorage. The Alaskan Malamute represents the Alaskan character, proud, independent, and sometimes even stubborn. The Alaskan Malamute is friendly, fun-loving, just like Alaskans. The Alaskan Malamute is huge, just like Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Marilyn Flores.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Madeline Flores. I'm a fifth grader at Polaris K-12 school in Anchorage. Alaskans love dogs, and the Alaskan Malamute is Alaska's oldest dog. It arrived with the very first people 5,000 years ago, maybe even earlier. With its very long and distinguished history, the Alaskan Malamute has always been an intelligent, hardworking, and loyal partner. By honoring the Alaskan Malamute, we are also honoring the very first people of Alaska. Alaska's entire history will also be honored because this amazing dog was there and actively involved every step of the way. The Alaskan Malamute is an amazing dog that helped to open up the state and make Alaska what it is today. The Alaskan Malamute deserves to be recognized as our official state dog. Thank you for helping to make that possible.
Thank you very much. And that's the last of the names I have from the school. Is there anybody else at Polaris School that wishes to testify? Do any of the teachers at Polaris School wish to testify?
For the record, Mr. Chair, the teachers have decided not to testify because this is the student's bill, and as you hear, they are doing it quite well. This is their day, and we don't want to interrupt. We just want to support.
Yeah, I do need to have your name, though.
I'm sorry. This is Jamie Rodriguez, one of the three teachers.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez. And I'd like to congratulate all the teachers at Polaris School for assisting with this project. And, you know, we have a lot of bills heard in this room and in other rooms. And I wish we could go through, I think it's about 35 or so folks who testified. And I never had so many testify so rapidly and on point and say different things since I've been here. So
thank you. Our students are very passionate, so this was an easy thing for them to do because they really believe in this. They've done the work. They really, really, really believe in this.
Thank you. Is there anybody else online who would like to testify? Okay.
At this end, no. We'll just listen.
Okay. Is there anybody in the room who would like to testify? Before I close public testimony, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm not sure which person there would be the right one to address the question to, but could you tell us the exact way that it is written in the Kennel Club or the designation of the breed? Is it Alaskan Malamute or is it Alaska Malamute as officially listed?
For the record, this is Madeline Flores. It's Alaskan Malamute.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Representative Grunberg.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Seaton. It's Alaskan with an N, as in November, Malamute, and they capitalize it. I note, and I've looked at the letters in here, most of the folks wish to utilize the capital M. We're a dog family in the Epstein-Grunberg household, and my mother had a kennel of Bedlington Terriers. I don't recall whether they were capitalized or not. And I would like to apologize for my very wrong comment earlier. I try not to do that. I was talking about an amendment, and I do apologize for the record. I try to keep my foot out of my mouth.
And I do notice that you put the Epstein-Grunberg family and not the other way.
That's right.
He's
in the order of importance, beauty, and brains.
There you go. He does not want to lose that vote in his district.
That's my wife, Snake Caleb.
And at this point, I'm going to close public testimony and open up for a committee discussion. I believe we have a potential amendment from Representative Wilson.
Yes, I would like to move amendment number one.
We have two here.
Well, we have, this is her, this has not been moved.
But I don't know which one we're referring to.
I'll object to hear the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
That's a totally different amendment.
I don't have another amendment.
But she's making a conceptual.
She's going to make it.
Excuse me, I thought you had one.
This is the expert on amendments, by the way.
I would like to move amendment number one, and the amendment, it's a conceptual amendment, but it would say amend lines 1 and 4 by changing the word Malamute to have a capital M at the beginning of the word, both in line 1 and also in line 2.
May I ask you to explain what a conceptual amendment is as compared to a written amendment?
A conceptual amendment is an amendment that it's not written down, and so I want to make sure that it's written the way it should be according to Ledge Legal, and so I'm allowing them, when it's a conceptual amendment, I'm allowing them to make slight changes of it so that it'll fit the bill perfectly.
Because sometimes a bill, this potential bill here has only one section. Some bills have maybe 50, 100 seconds. And the conceptual amendment, Ledge Legal, will take the amendment and put it into the bill where it belongs best. So we give them the freedom to do that, but then we can amend their conceptual amendment if we so choose. Is there any objection to that amendment, objection for discussion?
I objected for discussion, but
after hearing... Objection for discussion would mean he may or may not actually object to the bill, but he would like to have the opportunity to discuss this. And we will call on Representative Johnson and Representative Peterson.
And my objection was strictly to hear the explanation of why we do it, and I'm probably prepared to remove my objection, having heard the full motion. So.
Okay, well, before we do that, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was so convinced by the young gentleman that testified a couple minutes ago about why Malamute needs to be capitalized that he's got me sold 100% that he is correct, and so I am going to be supporting this amendment. Thank you.
Any other discussion on the amendment? Vice Chair Seaton?
Just for clarification, the amendment was on line 1 and line 4?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, any other discussion? Representative Goddard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was some question that I don't have an answer to, but Malamute can be spelled in two different ways. You can spell it M-A-L-A mute or M-A-L-E mute. And since I see it as Malamute the way it's printed here, I think that's probably the more appropriate one. And so I'm going to stick with it. But I thought since you were so interested, I love hearing from all the students that I'm betting you already knew that. But I wanted to make it on the record that we're going to be voting on the spelling, and we're going to pick M-A-L-A. Thank you.
An inquiry from the sponsor of the amendment. Did the amendment, would that only on the capitalization, or did it also include the spelling?
It was only on the capital, changing the beginning, the M at the front of the word to a capital M.
Would anybody like to make an amendment to the amendment on the spelling?
No, it's right.
Spelled properly.
Okay, fine. Do you still maintain your objection?
Mr. Chairman, after hearing that great explanation, I will remove my objection.
You sure you don't want us to vote on this?
I'm certain I don't have an amendment. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Not today.
Okay. I am going to call for a vote on this amendment so we can see how the voting process is. Would you read the roll call, please, and we'll do a vote on this.
Representative Grunberg?
Yes.
Representative Peterson?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Gatto?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Chair Lynn?
Yes.
7 yea, 0 nay.
And so the amendment is hereby adopted. And I had an amendment to delete Malamute and insert Sled Dog. because we heard from several of the mushers up in the valley about this, but after hearing the testimony, I don't think I'm going to submit the amendment. If someone else wishes to do that, they may. Is there any other discussion on this bill? Representative Goddard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is pretty much for the students. Most of the people on this committee, in fact, in this building, probably don't know that I used to be a musher, and I had a team of dogs. And I wasn't very good at it, so I didn't enter in races. But living in the house next to me was a man named Jerry Gustafson, who had a team of, guess what, Malamutes. And he became the champion of the sled dog, not the sled dog, but the, I forget there was a term that was for it, but he wanted to pull heavy sleds, and it was called the weight pulling contest. And he won it with his team of Malamutes. So I wanted to give him some recognition and also to let you know that it was Malamutes that was required, and because he had a lot of other people that he had to compete against, but he did win the race using, not the race, but the weight pulling contest using Malamutes. Thank you.
Any other comment? If not, I'm going to have you call the roll again, and we'll put this up to vote whether we pass HB 14 or not. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, you need to move. Mr. Chairman, I'd move House Bill 14 as amended from committee with individual recommendations and
fiscal note.
Do we have a fiscal note?
Yeah.
And attached fiscal note?
Yeah. And so if this bill passes, we'll have an opportunity to put four different recommendations down as we so choose. We can put down do pass, do not pass, no recommendation, or amend. If this bill passes out of committee. So would you please call the roll?
Mr. Chairman, just so that we can do this properly, I will object so that we can vote.
Fine. And Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I think that technically, just for the record, so that the kids know, it's going to be a committee substitute because we have amendment number one that we've adopted.
Yeah, that's right. So we have the original bill. We pass an amendment on this, and so it has to be changed. So when it goes to next committee, apparently it's going to go straight to the Rules Committee and then to the floor. They will be working off of the committee substitute, which includes the amendment. Representative Wilson.
Do we need to amend the motion because the motion said with individual recommendations and we're not doing it that way? I don't know.
You will still have
we still do the recommendation after we vote.
Okay.
Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Peterson?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Gatto?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Grunberg?
Yes.
Chair Lynn?
Yes.
7 yea, 0 nay.
And the bill has passed. And thank you for presenting this bill, Representative Gardner. It's been some of the most efficient testimony I've ever heard in this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I make a comment?
Yes, please.
We spend a lot of time trying to understand the problems around this state and address them, and we've, many of us, I know there are three of us here who are members of the Education Committee, and we hear about failures and flaws in school and education programs, and sometimes it's easy to forget that there's also lots of really, really wonderful work going on in schools around this state, and I think this hearing has been a reminder of some of the great things that are possible and the enthusiastic, passionate, and very competent work that is going on. Thank you.
And this is how bills are done here, and we have, gavel, turn this around. Here we have a form that we're all going to sign our name to this and put on our individual recommendations on it. So I'll pass it down. They'll be signing their name, and they'll be putting do pass, do not pass, no recommendations or amend. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, our next bill, we'd like to call up is for House Bill number 136, and we have a committee substitute on this. So, we're going to consider House Bill 130. Going to get a motion, please, to adopt the CS. Representative Vice Chair Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move that we adopt CS for House Bill 13626, LS0574/R as our working document.
Is it without objection?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
I'll defer to Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, I would object just to see that so that the differences could be explained.
Excellent.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Grunberg. May I make a request? I think that Representative Johnson and I may feel very similarly. Generally, before we adopt a CS, I would like to know the differences, and I would maybe for the record sort of have a standing notation on that so that we can, and it seems that Representative Johnson feels
I'll object every time.
Maybe that can be the practice in the committee that we would have the explanation.
That, in most cases, we'll do that.
Yeah,
Representative Johnson, can you explain the changes?
I'm not making the changes. I just like them explained.
Who can explain? Representative Rammers, can you come forward? Or whoever is going to speak to the changes. You missed it. Well, you got into part of a very good hearing, didn't you?
Yes, sir. There are a lot of changes in here.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. It's nice to see all of you.
It's so nice to see you, too. You look very good this morning.
Thank you very much. So do you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for joining us. I always enjoy hearing your testimony.
Yes, sir. I missed this committee. Mr. Chairman, today we're Dana Strumman is with me. She's going to introduce. She's going to introduce this bill. I just want to preface it by telling the committee just a very brief overview on what the catalyst was for developing this piece of legislation. This is the Officer Protection Bill, and we talked to some of the folks that look after our public safety. And as you know from previous legislation that many of us have voted on, methamphetamine is quite a scourge across the state of Alaska. And when law enforcement was making a bust of a meth house, when they were gathering evidence they had gone in and made the arrests, they found that the criminals had gathered the names of law enforcement folks and where they lived and their addresses, and had access then to the schools that their children went to, and it was it's menacing. You know, we live in the Google age, and so the Officer Protection Bill provides an element of being able to shade information to protect those that are vulnerable to a criminal element who could threaten the safety and security of their families. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Dana Strumman, who's going to introduce the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
And I'll be available for questions afterwards.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you and good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Dana Strumman, staff member of Representative Ramirez. And I believe I have a very tough act to follow. The children were very good in the last testimony, so you'll excuse me if I'm not quite as good as them. But to clarify the question in regards to the CS, you'll see in Section D, that is the change, and the only change from the first draft of the bill to the CS. And it is in regards to removing the State Recorder's Office in Department of Natural Resources, which I believe Vicki Backus is actually off net to talk a bit more in regards to that. But we had a discussion with them just in regards to their use of public records and receiving information from entities outside of state offices. And so as far as their work that they would need to do to remove it was quite extensive, and so we made an exception, and that is what's found in the CS. So,
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, having heard that explanation, I'll remove my objection.
Okay, without further objection, we will adopt the CS for House Bill 136, and you would proceed now to present the bill itself.
Excellent. Thank you, Chair. House Bill 136, an act limiting the release in certain information concerning certain public employees or officials, addresses a growing concern, as previously outlined by Representative Ramirez, not only throughout the state of Alaska, but also through the nation as well, to protect the privacy and personal information to release to the public. While the safety and officers of government officials continue to serve our state effectively and heroically, House Bill 136 would provide them and their loved ones, such as spouse or minors in their homes, the assurance that their public records cannot be released upon request, for example, by prisoners or Googled, such as stated earlier. By providing an opportunity for state officers and government officials to file for confidentiality, and I would ask that you can view a form that's in your packet as an example of what the confidentiality form would look like, that they would fill out, their private and personal information, such as home addresses, names associated with property records, and telephone numbers, will not be released to the public. This confidentiality agreement will remain in place until rescinded in writing by the state officer or government official. With that, I welcome any questions regarding House Bill 136. Thank you.
I had a couple of questions. Perhaps I should have reviewed this more carefully. Does that include the voter database?
Well, at this point, basically, we are getting more and more kind of more information on what would be what we need to add in here. But at this point, yes, it would be anything that the state has access to, not releasing the information.
And then if I want to communicate with a constituent who may be in one of these categories, either on legislative business or on doing a campaign, how would I do that?
Chair, to answer your question, we are working directly with the Department of Law exactly on issues such as that, because obviously we know we need to work this a little bit more for situations like that where it needs to be tweaked a bit more.
Okay, you've been passed the note there.
Mr. Chairman, if I have
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, I think this only deals with public officials and not the private sector, and if their address is public, we would, as elected officials, be able to communicate that with them. This is only communications with public officials.
Well, I understand that, but what if I want to communicate with people covered by this, say law enforcement people who may live in my district and other people covered here who may, in fact, live in my district? If I want to communicate with them on legislative business or doing part of a campaign?
Yeah, and Chair, I do understand the question, and that is something where it would be an issue we'd have to work with the Department of Law to make sure that those small stipulations are taken care of so that you wouldn't run into issues in that.
Another reason why I ask on it is because any of us can go down to the Division of Elections and buy the voter database for the entire state.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I also have a question. As an elected official, if I fill out this form and ask that my information be held confidential, would that preclude APOC from releasing any information that I might have in my records?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, this is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Ramirez. And what it would do would exclude your home address and your home telephone number if you so choose to fill out the form.
And so this is optional, as I understand it. If you fill it out, it would be removed, but if you don't fill it out, it would be as it is now. Is that correct?
Right.
Yes, that is correct. Essentially, it would be given in the packet when you were hired, for example, and so it is upon your own will to fill out the confidentiality agreement.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Peterson and then Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that this is a well-intentioned bill because we do need to protect members of the that have public positions from harm. I just think that there's some more developing that maybe needs to be done on this bill at this point. And I also am wondering if you have elected officials listed here, and one of the things that the voters want to find out about and know for sure is, does the person that they're voting for actually live in their district? And there's been some questions about previous candidates, whether they in fact did live in their district or not. And if you opt to hide your address when you fill out these forms, then the public may be even more suspicious of candidates. And so I think we may want to actually eliminate elected officials from this list. And that might be an amendment that I would be offering.
I know during my last campaign and primary election, I had an opponent. I only had a post office box. I went down to the Division of Elections, and they would not tell me his street address. I assumed he did not live in his post office box. In this case, he may have. I don't know.
Representative Lynn, through the chair, I live in my post office box. I can assure you of that.
I'm not going to pursue that. Vice Chair Seaton.
I wouldn't go there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I was a little concerned there that I'm reading this a little differently. On page 1, starting on line 9, where it says, if a public record, such an assessor's database, is compiled or annotated by physical address or other identifying characteristic, then the name of a person who is eligible for confidentiality in this section and has applied for it may not be released. So it's not just that the physical address isn't going to be released, as I read this bill. It's the person's name would not be released. So therefore, it appears that a municipality that has tax records or has anything, it's not only that the address wouldn't be released, but this says the person's name would not be released.
Mm-hmm.
Am I reading that correctly?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, what it says is that because of what is public records and what is accessible, that the address and the assessor's information would be available. However, the name associated with that information would not be available. It would be blank.
Follow up, Mr.
Yes.
Chairman. So we would say that there is a parcel of unknown ownership, let's say my house. There would be a parcel listing, and there would be a value or whatever resident address, but there would be no name connected with that parcel. So that is that what would happen? Is
Representative Seaton, through the chair, yes, that is the intention of the bill.
So then I could look at this list and see where there's a property description or whatever on there, but no name, and I would know if there's no name there, it's one of these people.
Representative Lynn, I believe that would be possible if you wanted to search through all of the blank names at the assessor's office.
There are people out there who, dangerous people, who would in fact do that, I think.
Sure.
Continue, please.
I guess I just wanted to follow up, and that is that in the CS we adopted, we exempted the state recorder's office because of the costs. But we are putting this on the municipalities and the boroughs to do exactly the same thing with exactly the same kind of costs that we're not willing the state to have to undergo, but we're requiring them to comply with this. Is that, am I reading that correctly?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, we would require the municipalities to comply. And I do believe Section D was more than just a cost issue. It was a matter of it would take just huge amounts of manpower to go through. There are also UCC filings, which have a whole other part of law where we would end up conflicting out. So there were certain things that we, you know, tried to draw some sideboards on this, and I realize we still have to work with the Department of Law and the agencies on these sideboards, you know, as to what would be acceptable and what would not be.
I'm just trying to get my hands around the differences between the municipality and the state offices. So the state offices would be a UCC filing or a court filing, but I'm trying to get the distinction between the costs that would be incurred by a municipality under this and how that is different for that recorder's office, you know, for borough recording, borough taxes, versus the state recorder's office that I don't believe even maintains the tax base. That's maintained by the municipality.
Representative Seaton, that is correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wilson and Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is, if we put this into statute, Are we opening up our cities and our state even for lawsuits if someone has signed this confidentiality statement and wants it, and then by accident or somehow somebody gets it, and so somebody sues?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we used, if you look at the form, actually, we used it as an example, but I believe for the purposes of avoiding lawsuits and not having people held responsible, that would be something where we would have to work through the Department of Law to write some sort of caveat in there to make sure that people aren't held responsible.
Hey, Representative Grunberg?
Representative Wilson and I are thinking alike on this. I was quite concerned about the additional tort liability. For one thing, this would become effective in 90 days, and unless all of these agencies could completely comply with the law within 90 days, if they failed to disclose and there was a danger, a lawsuit, this would be the standard, and it could be considered negligence per se and expose terrific tort liability to all these levels of government. I'm also concerned about the same thing that Representative Peterson talked about, and not just from a the point of view of the bill, but for the point of view of making us available to our constituents, also another level I'm concerned about. Criminal defendants are quite often, if they're convicted, blame people other than themselves, particularly defense attorneys. And this protects the prosecution but not the defense. And we've seen situations where people have gone after their lawyers and family lawyers, too, where in my profession, in a high-risk situation. This is, it's a slippery slope situation here. And I don't know how to deal with it, but I do think that there are lots of issues in this bill that require careful determination by this committee. And I don't often say this, but I support the necessity of protecting law enforcement folks, and I see some of them in the audience here. And I'm not downgrading that, but this is something that has lots of ramifications, and it's one of these little bills that requires some careful thought, and you've heard around the table here just some of our initial thoughts.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, this goes to the Judiciary Committee next, and I do not believe that it will escape the process without a fiscal note, which it does not have a finance referral yet, but I would be amazed if it would go through without one, and I'd be willing to work with you and Chair Lynn, who both sit on Judiciary, and make sure our concerns are addressed before it moves.
And Representative Gatto.
And Representative Gatto.
And Representative Gatto. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe this is a well-intentioned bill, but I'm wondering if this will work in the age of Google, because someone who has got some computer savvy and some time on their hands and an up-to-date new computer in a matter of minutes can get almost any information about any individual that they're looking to get, and so this mandate would be expensive to if we had someone had to develop a program for their personnel department, and might actually not really protect anyone in the end, and I don't know. Had you thought about that before? Or?
Representative Peterson, through the chair. There are a lot of computer companies that just sell information, and they'll plug in and they'll pull every bit of public information there is out there, every news article, every whatever, and sell it to anybody. And I think that's part of the concern, is not having the first step be through state records and public records.
Okay. Representative Gatto, then Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's something called a site address, and I think that's the lot 1, block 2, subdivision 3, parcel 4, something like that. If that were included in a database, would a person be able to access Officer Jones by looking there and saying, well, who lives at lot 1, block 2, site 3, et cetera, and be able to defeat the original intent of the bill by making something not accessible?
Go ahead.
Representative Gatto, through the chair. I think there's always a back door to get through. You start closing off all avenues and you may create more problems. Site addresses are not always the easiest to interpret. And, you know, lot one, block, blah, 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 blah. I think it would deter a lot of criminals, but then again, it may not. It's not the easiest way to chase somebody down, but they would be available. There's no way to totally get rid of those. I mean, deeds are recorded, you know.
Sure.
I know that when I was in the real estate business and I wanted to find out who lived in a certain property, who owned that vacant lot, I'd go to a title company and tell them where it was, and they'd come back with the name of the owner, who may not be living there because it might be a renter living there.
Representative Lynn, yes, I can go online and find out who lives anywhere in Fairbanks just from the assessor's database, and that's really the first line that we're trying to make sure.
I believe Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is needed. I think there are people that need to be protected, and I can just give you a little scenario. I knew a lady that had left her significant other because of spousal abuse, or maybe not spouse, but whatever, and went somewhere else, got an unlisted telephone number, and with less than a day, he had, you know, and so it can be very scary, I think, no matter what the situation is in different scenarios. I think this bill needs to be have a lot more work on it, but I think that you're on a good track there, and I hope you can work it out so that we end up with a good bill, because I think things like this are needed. So,
would Representative, you say that
through the chair, that's the intent here.
You say there's something like the locks on my house, it makes the potential burglar go next door. If I got locks in my house, it would go someplace else. It only deter the casual person, but not the really astute mm-hmm. person who wants to find out where you are. And unfortunately, some criminals are very astute.
Fortunately, not all of them, though.
Some of them are in good condition, too, because they have work out at the gym that we don't have time to do. Representative Seaton, Vice Chair Seaton.
Thank you. In Section D, we have the public agency, not including DNR. DMV is still included in here, is that correct? So so all the driver's license or information would be?
Representative Seaton, DMV is kind of a different hybrid because they really don't give out a lot of public information. There is actually a form you can fill out and it has to be requested. But this would prevent DMV from giving out personal information too.
And at the moment, if I may, you can't really get DMV information unless you have, the proper authority to do so. I just can't go get DMV information, but you know, a lot of agencies can.
Representative Lynn, that's correct.
Representative Gerberg, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as we're raising issues and things you need to look at here, Jane. What Representative Wilson was touching on is the need for confidentiality by victims and by people who may be the subject, the plaintiff for a protective order. the recipient of a protective order, not the person against whom the order was issued. We had a bill that Senator Guess passed a few years ago dealing with information from the permanent fund, and I think we had to repeal part of it or amend part of it, but there are other similar kinds of legislation we've dealt with. I've lost track, and I don't know how they've been handled, and this is not a standalone kind of a thing. And I'm just sort of spotting issues here. I don't have any answers today.
Okay. Vice Chair Seaton?
Thank you. I'm a little concerned about the fiscal note. I mean, public safety has a zero fiscal note. And with the exemption that we're putting in here, if we exempt the requirement from there, we may come up with a zero fiscal note, but a huge fiscal note on municipalities, which is not going to be a fiscal note because it's not the state. And so I guess what I'd request is this, as we further consider this, that we find out whether the exemption has zeroed, will create a zero fiscal note through the process for the state agencies. And maybe we could get some kind of a an estimate of what the fiscal impact is going to be on boroughs. I just received an email from my borough that, you know, that they said as it stands right now, all physical addresses are uploaded to the parcel viewer. They have GIS and 911 management, and they're very concerned that this could impact 911 management as well as their GIS and assessing in the borough. So I don't know how those play out. You know, need some more information. I'm just raising the question with you. Thanks.
I think at this point I'd like to go to some of the folks on the line here.
Mr. Chair, may I ask the question to Representative Seaton for a second?
Representative Gardberg.
Representative Seaton, would you mind sharing that with
sure.
the rest of our committee? Because I'd like to send that to the municipality of Anchorage, for example, and see what their views are.
Representative Gurnberg, I'm going to call on the municipality of Anchorage
now. That's great.
Just Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that this bill is a work in progress, and there is a list of people that you want to exempt in this. And have you been receiving calls from other specific groups or classifications of people that would like to be included on this list?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we might be able to think of other groups that we might want to add to this list. And have you received calls from people recently that wanted to be added to the list?
Yes, Representative Peterson, through the chair, we have in fact received quite a few people who want to be added. So, you know, we'll do the due diligence of working with each of those groups to analyze whether or not that is likely that they be added
I
to that
list. I think Reverend Rammer would like to weigh in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
A little louder, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very, very quickly, just 2 points. One is this is not a blackout bill. It's a shading bill. So the intent is to make it more difficult, not to make it impossible to source some of these people. It's meant to be a deterrent, kind of like the analogy you suggested with the lock. It's a first lock. It's not a bulletproof, you know, impenetrable wall. Secondly, we're very sensitive to trying not to Christmas tree this bill out to whom it will cover. We're very interested in covering the folks that are our first line of defense, those men and women who are standing in harm's way so that we can enjoy quiet, safe enjoyment of our lives, and mindful of the fact that we don't want their families to be targeted while they're looking out for our safety and protection. So we're very interested in having a much narrower application to this bill rather than a broader application that would go to victims and to defense attorneys. And we're very sensitive to keeping this narrower in scope to recognize just the folks that are interested in our public protection. And we will allow future legislatures, if we're fortunate enough to move through this committee and through this legislature, to address whether in the Google age this is something that should be able to enjoy a broader application, but in this case, we're interested in a narrow application, primarily for public safety and those who are first line of defense.
I appreciate that clarification. I think you're directly on point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
At this point, to get some, I'm going to go to municipality of Anchorage and Marty McGee with the assessor of municipality of Anchorage. Are you online?
Hi, this is Marty McGee. I'm present.
You're down here to testify. I assume you've been listening in. Could you enlighten us on some of the things we've been discussing here, some of the questions?
Yeah. I'm here also with the CFO from Anchorage, Sharon Weddleton.
Yes, I have her down here, too. You, if you wish, can testify together.
Yes. And we're very encouraged by a lot of the comments that have been made. I'm going to make my testimony fairly brief and hand it over to Sharon to make most of the comments on behalf of the municipality. I'd just like to say I've been working on this problem for at least 6 years. I've been working with the chief of police and the chief of the fire department in Anchorage, the city manager, and several mayors. I'm convinced after working on it for quite some time that legislation is not the way to address the problem. That the only way to effectively protect individuals who are in jeopardy like this is to train them as to how to protect their identity. There are so many different databases with people's names, addresses, and so forth out in the world, in the on the internet, that it's impossible, and it creates false sense of security to close one door when all the rest of the doors and windows are open. Anybody with any skill at all, and this is a global problem. One of my favorite comments is, as soon as something goes on the internet, Osama knows. Virtually everyone in the world has access to the internet information. There are marketing lists. The assessment process is intended to be a public process where the information is available to all taxpayers. So to go in administratively and try to bandage up the system to prevent certain individuals from appearing just leaves so many loopholes and so much liability that it's a very ineffective way to address the problem. And I am very sincerely concerned about individual safety. I've been approached not only by our local law enforcement folks, but law enforcement folks who are either retired, on federal, involved in national security, all kinds of different ways. And I've counseled all of them that they need to learn how to protect their identity. Just having me remove their name from the assessment list doesn't provide them any security at all. With that, I'll close my testimony. I'm certainly available to answer questions, and I would hand it over to Sharon Weddleton.
One moment, please. Representative Grunberg.
Excellent questions that you're raising here. It sounds like you agree that there is a problem. So the bill does address a real problem. But it sounds like you think that there is a different solution to the problem. And you said very briefly that the solution is to help these people protect themselves. Did I hear you right?
Through the chair, that's correct. I feel that all of these people should have training as part of their job as to how to protect their personal identity from searches on through the internet.
Could we, as a legislature, help provide that training or fund that training or something so these people can protect themselves?
I certainly think that's a viable option.
Yeah, thank you. Reverend Peterson, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was as much a comment as a question. I agree with the testimony about the availability of information on the internet. As a matter of fact, I, who don't consider myself very internet savvy, found name, address, phone number, employment information for a friend of mine who I hadn't talked to or seen in over 30 years in less than 10 minutes. So someone who actually knows their way around the internet could probably do it in 2 minutes. So I'm just wondering whether there might be another way to solve the problem of the vulnerability of some of our law enforcement officials and public defenders. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Let's go to Sharon Reddleton, and I also want to be sure I get to
Mr. Chairman, before we go out, the municipality question, if I could.
Yes, okay. But before I want to make sure we allow time here to hear from at least the PSEA, somebody from that group. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this question is for the municipality of Anchorage. In regards to your training question, how would you propose training someone to take their name off a tax roll?
The way your name appears on the tax roll generates from the way title is held to property. So if you put all the property you own into a series of trusts or corporations, your personal name doesn't appear. And the law requires us an assessment to reflect the owner of record. So it would automatically secure the problem in terms of the database.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just follow up, do you have any idea what it costs to enter your private property into a private trust, hire an attorney, and to shield yourself that way? Do you have any idea what that would cost, say, a police officer?
Well, it can be done by individuals without the benefit of counsel. There are published information to set up simple trusts, and it could be certainly done as part of support through employment as part of the counseling. We offer public officials help in establishing their estate problems and other things like this, so there's no reason why we can't offer them similar counseling and forms and opportunities to do that on ownership of property and protection of identity.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My understanding is that you can go to state sites and find out who is involved in trust and corporations. So we will need this type of legislation, even under your scenario, to protect people who are in those corporations and trust. So this type of legislation at some point is going to be necessary for us to address. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I believe there's ways to not have individuals' names appear. We see a lot of documents which are recorded, summary of trust. The actual trust documents are not recorded, so the individual names. This is actually a problem for us in administration of exemption programs that we encounter on a daily basis.
I know that I can find out the officers of the corporation rather easily. Representative Ramirez, this may feed into what you were saying earlier. This is not a armored door.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would share with the committee that we have had an overview in judiciary on online predators as a new horizon of crime, and it's so enormous and it's so vast, but law enforcement's response to that hasn't been it's so big we shouldn't try at all to address this issue. In fact, what they've decided is it's so big but we have to figure out how to begin to address this issue, and that's why I would encourage this committee to pursue this online protection. Let's make it narrow in scope. Let's work on an application requesting line officers to go get trusts and create corporations is so extraordinarily cumbersome that is, in my mind, is not a realistic solution. And as you point out, Mr. Chairman, then you get to go find out who's in the trust. We want to put the first couple of locks on a door for a very narrow population who provides the public safety with which we enjoy and have the quiet enjoyment of our lives, Mr. Chairman. And that's the application of the Officer Protection Bill as a shading instrument, not a blackout instrument, a shading instrument.
That's similar to the old story about starfish on the beach. You can save one, but you can't save them all.
Mr. Chairman, before we move on to other testimony, I would like to ask the sponsor, if I could, to try to formulate, I don't see this bill moving out of committee today, so if you could formulate, and I don't know if it's possible, how many people are we talking about? Are we talking about 100? Are we talking about 1,000? I don't see us talking about a huge volume of people that we actually have to go and purge, which I think will address the fiscal no problem. If we're talking about 2,000 people, we're not talking about everyone. We're talking about a limited number And as people are added, they could be it could be addressed. So I'd like to know the numbers we're actually talking about in a future meeting, Mr. Chairman, so that we can get that the number that narrowed down.
Yeah, I do want we're beginning to run out of time. I do want to hear from Sharon Reddleton, and I would like to hear from perhaps Rob Cox or Scott Johnson or somebody like that to get the other side of this. So Sharon Reddleton, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here. Thank you very much.
Would you give us your name and title and proceed?
Yes, Sharon Weddleton. I am CFO of the Municipality of Anchorage, here to share the municipality's opposition to the House bill as it's currently written. I believe that the intent of this bill was narrow, but the impact of the bill, if passed under its current state, is extremely broad, to the point where it would be administratively very burdensome, and a comment on the fiscal note that there was no fiscal impact would most certainly not apply to the municipality of Anchorage. I wanted to offer a few examples of when the municipality would share potentially the address of a person eligible for confidentiality were this bill to pass that this committee has not really discussed yet. For instance, a prosecuting attorney working for the municipality of Anchorage pays the United Way his annual contribution via a personal check that includes his name and address on the personal check. We share that information with the United Way when we distribute it on his request, but it inadvertently breaks the law. Number two, administration of COBRA benefits would prevent us from being able to administer COBRA benefits for people who've applied for confidentiality and were municipal employees. Number three, administration of health insurance with a third-party administrator. Number four, administration of health benefits with pharmacies and doctors. Number five, working with the state of Alaska PERS requires us to constantly share names and addresses of people who might apply for confidentiality. But even more so, administration of our 401k plan and 457 plan. Number six, when a levy upon connection roll is presented for the assembly approval, there are names and physical addresses on those rolls that would have to be scrubbed by comparing them to the list. Number seven, when people who had applied for confidentiality next apply to be a member of a public commission, their resume is subject to public review by the assembly with name and address. Number two, our enforcement of our SCOF law program, enforcement of liens, collection of unpaid debts, sending W-2s to the IRS, which we're required to do, and responding to lenders when a person who's applied for confidentiality applies for a mortgage. So I believe that the intent was narrow, but that this bill needs to be substantially amended to bring the scope back in line with what I think people intended. The list I've given you is an extremely short list. I think if I made a few phone calls, I could give you 500 examples of how the bill in its current form could change municipal practices at substantial cost. I agree that as it's currently written, the municipality would have exposure for inadvertent errors, and we shouldn't be subject to that exposure. I believe that this bill is not necessary because, as Municipal Assessor Marty McGee spoke, a person can put their home in a trust, use a P.O. box, an unlisted phone number, and that the employees should receive and should be eligible to receive training on how to protect their confidentiality for their families. I agree that the idea of privacy is an illusion. The lock on your house merely sends the burglar to your window. And let me give you an example. When you go to a grocery store and you pay for your groceries with a check that has your name and address on that check with your name and address and the MICR code for your bank account number can be seen by an unlimited number of people from that point on. We cannot ensure privacy through this bill.
I'm going to have to ask you that because I want to get one more person up here, and we only have about 5 minutes to go. But
okay.
Let me ask, could you send that list to the committee and perhaps to Reverend Mammers, the sponsor? And I will state that when I was on the police department in Tucson and I had checked, my address was not on my checkbook. because you can put whatever check you want to, and mine, neither my phone number or address was on there, only my name. Reverend Grunberg, quickly.
Ma'am, could you put your entire testimony in writing?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question of the person testifying. You gave off a long list of things. Are you telling me that if I called you up and wanted somebody's PERS information, you would give it to me?
No. What we do is we are constantly interacting with entities outside of the municipality of Anchorage where, for business reasons, we communicate a person's name and address and sometimes a telephone number. If you read the bill, it would prohibit us from doing that. And I don't believe that is the intent of the bill. What I'm suggesting is that the bill be amended so that it is not as administratively burdensome on the cities and the boroughs and the municipalities. And I think it could be easily amended to make it less troublesome for the municipality of Anchorage.
Mr. Chairman, if I'm...
Representative Johnson.
Could you give me one example of someone who could call you up and you'd give PERS information to?
As I said before, we wouldn't give PERS information to an anonymous caller over the phone. But what I was trying to convey is that if you read this House bill, it would prevent us from conducting our current business practices with vendors such as health insurance companies and 401k companies because of the way the bill is currently written. So I will repeat my statement that the bill, before it's passed, needs to be amended to make it more cognizant of some of the inadvertent effects it would have in its current form.
Thank you. And I would like to call Scott Johnson in Anchorage. He's with the PSEA. And unfortunately, I'm going to give you about 2 minutes, but at least make an introduction. And we're going to hold this bill today, and we'll invite you to come back, but to give a little bit of the other side, at least today, I would appreciate it.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Real quick, I'm testifying before you today as a father of three children, a husband, a lifelong Alaskan, an off-duty policeman. I wrote a letter to Representative Ramis on this bill. I hope you all received a copy of it, and I'd like it to be admitted as written testimony for the bill. This bill is important to anyone in public service who has ever arrested someone or secured them in jail for committing a crime against society. Correctional officers, judges, police officers, DAs are all at risk of retaliation. This is a significant problem in the lower 48. I'm afraid it's just a matter of time before it does happen here in Alaska. I'm currently an 18-year veteran of Alaska law enforcement. I've been a case officer for several high-profile cases where sexual predators, murders have been sentenced to lengthy prison terms. Now, I am fearful of possible retaliation at some point in time. I'm currently working undercover assignments, and my unit has investigated, arrested, charged, and prosecuted many serious offenders. Most of these have also concluded with the offender receiving significant penalties. And because of what we do, the members of my unit do go great lengths to conceal our office location, the vehicles we drive, and most importantly, where we live, through no fault of my own, but through courtroom testimony, police reports where I have to state my name in open court, and defendants learn our real names on a daily basis, and armed with just that name, they can easily go to the borough database, property database, and obtain my home location. They can even print out a map to my front door. And I agree with Representative Ramirez that we're just trying to shut down this one avenue that is so easy. We all take precautions, but I have to give my name in open court, and with that name only, they can easily access where I live, and that's to no fault of my own. And again, my job takes me away from my home for days at a time, leaving my family vulnerable and unprotected. I think House Bill 136 is good for all Alaskans because it does enhance the police officer's ability to effectively perform their duties without undue concern for the safety of their families and their self while they're away. We'd appreciate your support for Bill 136.
Thank you, and I would invite you to come back at a future hearing if you would so choose. And I know that even after you leave law enforcement to retire or go on to some other profession, you're still in danger. You put somebody in jail for 10 years and you retire, they're going to remember you even after you retire or you leave the department. I know in my own case, yeah, I was concerned even after I left the police department because I was not armed at that time. Yeah. With that, I'd like to thank you for bringing this bill forward. We want to protect those who protect us. And Representative Seaton?
Before we have our next hearing, could you also bring forward to us the other mechanisms, non-public, non-agency, such as the phone company? I mean, I think that what we're going to have is a situation where the most available data is going to be from the phone company or other folks that release that information, and they're not covered by this bill at all. So I just want to make sure that if we're putting significant burden on municipalities, that it really does something, and that there's not a more open database that's already available. Appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And if you could tell us when you are get some of the information together, working with different people we heard from today, perhaps others, then we'll try to get this back on the schedule just as rapidly as we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the committee. I don't have what's on housekeeping here. The schedule has not yet been finalized for Tuesday's meeting. I'd like to thank you for your participation. This is a good hearing today. The House